hold on to your butts. It's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die. Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And we're back with episode 119 of Destroy All Culture with me, Adam P. Nave, and of course, Aiden Morgan.
Ahoy, ahoy.
I'm getting better, but I'm still stumbling on it, damn it.
That's good. That's good. It still worked. Like, we got the names in the right order.
Right. I could feel myself pausing.
Yeah.
But as I'm like, what are our names? Who am I?
It's like we're imposters, and we're just trying to convince the
world. Are you my mommy?
This podcast is actually part of an elaborate conspiracy to convince people that Adam and Aiden are real people.
There you go.
Yeah.
So it was as you said just before we started recording, a psychically weird week for everyone, I think.
I think so.
You know, this is due to the midterm elections here in the US.
Exactly.
And yeah.
And I have to congratulate lots of people on getting out and voting.
That was
very heartening. And of course, Not
like
everything.
The biggest turnout for midterms in like 105 years.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And of course, you know, given the history of gerrymandering and the way the Senate, you know, is structured,
it's all bullshit.
Yeah, it wasn't a complete rout for Republicans and not like the decisive moral victory for America that some people would hope for.
But you knew it wouldn't be, and yeah. Frankly, it was still historic in a number of ways. And a good sign overall, but yeah, it was. I mean, it's still going on.
Yeah,
people don't seem to understand that. Like, you know, sometimes votes take a while. Like,
yeah. Sometimes you gotta. Sometimes the races are close. And that's the funny thing is that historically, races have always been close in the States.
Right.
It always comes down to like a small number of voters that like really make the difference.
Some people were complaining like the issue is with things like absentee votes or mail-in votes and you know all this, they have to be postmarked by a certain date, but that doesn't necessarily mean they'll be turned in by a certain date because of the post office.
Right.
And it's the media has just made such a thing of, well, we have to get, you know, we have to declare these races as fast as possible.
Yeah.
That now when a vote takes a couple days to count because there's a lot of shit going on, people are like, oh, there's something terrible going on. Like, no, it takes a while.
Yeah. And also, I have just also a reminder, at least to myself and to others, I guess.
Yeah.
Everybody would, you know, people want to talk about things like, you know, Russian hacking or, you know, whatever, some like sort of mastermind conspiracy. And I realize if you look at the Georgia race, all you need to do to suppress a vote is just cripple through in selective incompetence to a point where you just don't send out enough voting machines or don't send out power cords.
Well, I mean, you got to remember the actual meaning, the actual historical, you know, birth of the word sabotage.
My sabo.
It, you know, yeah, it's that whole thing of like you can screw up an entire system and make it look like, oh, I'm just an idiot.
That's
It's been done for centuries.
Yeah.
So.
And the tradition seems to continue on unabated.
Yes.
Anywho.
But moving away from politics.
Yes, away from politics.
So there was still stuff. I kind of want to actually start with something that I watched and I know you didn't.
Okay.
If that's cool.
Yep.
But I had heard some people say that like Adam Sandler's newest stand-up bit on Netflix was really good. And I'm not a huge Adam Sandler fan.
No, yeah.
Some of his stuff is funny, some of his stuff isn't, you know. But he's one of the people who's been around for so long, and there's been this resurgence of stand-up in recent years.
Yeah.
And I do love me some good stand-up. So, I figured I would check this out and see. And this was so weird on so many levels, I still don't quite know what I think about it.
Tell me more.
Okay. He didn't do almost any just like, well, first of all, he's very much in the pattern of, I'ma tell a joke.
Okay.
But A, most of his jokes were things like, I'm going to start a song. Like 90% of this was, I'm going to do this like short, like 30-second song.
Oh, that seems like
that like ends in a punchline?
Oh, okay, nice.
Which is fine, but it just, I don't know, when it's the majority of an act, it comes off weird. Because maybe it's just an expectation thing, but like when you hear a joke being set up and, you know, you have someone telling you like a story
and then they're going to go forward with it, and there's something there. But it's like when you hear this little song about, like, I don't even remember any of them, but, it, you know, there are a lot of, like, diarrhea ones type of thing, or, like, right. you know, or, like, some, like, song about, like, going downstairs at Christmas is really kind of cool. Oh, grandma's dead. Like, that's how they were all done? Like, okay. These weird, like, 90-degree turn punchline end-of-song things?
Hmm. Well, this reminded me of his old sort of SNL right. era stuff, when he would, like, just sing right. dumb songs. Yeah.
Right, but that seems to be mostly what he's doing. Like, it really is, like, 95% of it. And it's just, it's strange you just have a whole set built from that. Huh. But even stranger for me was that, like, they very obviously filmed somewhere between, like, 5 and 10 different concerts for this. And they were cutting between them, like, every joke.
Oh, that's a little odd. That would be jarring.
Right. Well, you know, where it's like he tells this joke, and then you get a laugh, and then you kind of, like, pan away a little bit, and you come back, and it's a different stage, a different outfit type of thing.
Right.
And they edit it to feel vaguely seamless, but it still makes me wonder, like, what does the actual set look like that it's this much of a mess? Do you know what I mean? Like, it gives me this lingering sense that something terrible kept happening.
That's right.
Except there's, like, one or two where he screws up and they kept it in. So I'm like, okay, that can't be it. Like, why are we doing this? And, like, some of the venues were really big and some of them were, like, very, very small little, like, nightclub type things. And maybe it was just to give a sense that look at how often he does this. There's even one bit where he's doing a joke and it cuts to, like, a slice view of 5 different versions of him all in sync telling the same joke.
Oh.
Like, singing this bit of a song. Just to kind of drive home the, we don't fucking know either. I don't know what that was about. But it really did make me kind of second-guess everything, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it didn't feel like, here's his performance. It felt like, here's the greatest hit stitched together in a coherent way, because God knows it never was entirely.
Yeah, that's odd. You can't... Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. So it's like, there was a bunch of it that was just, what? And near the end, like, it goes, like, a little bit longer, like an hour and 10-odd minutes. And somewhere close to the hour mark, it starts to drift a little bit. And not in a bad way necessarily, but like there's like one whole story about this roller coaster ride that's really kind of heartfelt and sweet and still funny. But like, I want more of that. Like, that was the where it wasn't just like, I'm going to tell a poop joke in like, you know, 30 seconds using a song.
Right.
But was more this kind of interesting, heartfelt, like, story that felt real. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's what kind of a lot of comedians kind of do that nowadays. They
right.
sneak in some heartfelt stuff, just to hit you in the feels amongst all their poop.
Yeah, no, and then he kind of closed with a whole song about Chris Farley, which again was nice, but it felt so jarringly out of place.
Hmm.
So I guess I don't know if I can recommend this unless you want to see the weirdness.
I'll see the weirdness.
But I can't be like, yeah, this is a great stand-up routine. Because it's not.
okay. But it's if nothing else, it's odd and not what you'd expect at this point in Sandler's career.
Maybe? It's not what I would expect from, like, any stand-up comedian, frankly.
Oh, weird.
Just because, again, like, the format is so broken that I would imagine, like, anyone else who tried this who didn't have the level of fame and just the sheer Netflix deal, frankly, that Sandler has, would have been allowed to get away with this.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Well, I'll watch it. I'll throw in my vote on that.
There
Netflix
you go.
Netflix will rack that up as another watch. This reminds me when you mention all the cuts. Last time we talked, I was telling you that I'd seen the Orson Welles movie,
right.
Outside of the Wind, and it's full of cuts, but I watched, they made a sort of a documentary about the making of it, They'll Love Me When I'm Dead. And there's a great moment, because of course, Welles, after he was shut out by the studio system, ended up making movies in Europe, like just on a ragtag budget, just making bits and pieces where he could, and there's this amazing anecdote. He was filming Macbeth, and there's a point where he was shooting the scene where some guy punches another guy, and at that point the production ran out of money. He had to leave and go act in movies to raise more money. He started 2 years later in a different country, and the next shot he filmed was literally the reaction shot to the punch, like a different cut, a different angle on the punch. And it looks seamless, but it's just hilarious to watch it.
Yeah.
To see how that how Orson Welles made that particular sausage. And it is kind of ridiculous and kind of inspiring. And kind of horrible at the same time, because you realize that Welles...
Well, sure.
You know, he could have done so much more if not for his constant struggle just to put movies together.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God. What else? We were just talking about stuff. Oh, speaking of constant struggle and putting things together, this week's Good Place. Mm-hmm. How's that for a segue?
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. I mean, I know that you did too.
Funny, about halfway through I thought, are they just recycling stuff that they didn't get to use from the first season? Is this the stuff that they would that they wrote but didn't use? And then I realized there was an actual point to it. But that was my initial thought. I felt like they were having their cake and eating it too by saying, "Well, let's show you stuff, more stuff from the Good Place." You know, the Good Place.
Right, and that's what hit me weird about it was just it felt like, in a weird way, that it was showing that they didn't quite trust themselves just on Earth right now.
Yeah, that was initially how I felt. But, I mean, after they
I still liked the episode.
Yeah, oh, I love the episode. And it also featured one of perhaps Jahani's best, like, name-drop jokes of all. Like, it just had me almost on the floor when she talks about the... I once had a pet cat. It was one of Barbara Streisand's clone cats, and it killed itself. And I don't know why that's so fucking funny.
But it is.
But a notion of a clone Siamese cat from Barbara Streisand committing suicide is just kind of perfect in the way that the best jokes are. Yeah.
Well, it's like, I wonder how long that they workshopped in the room the what's the funniest animal to have Kristen Bell just carry around?
A lizard.
Like, just, but I mean, because you know that they had to workshop that one for a minute.
Well, they actually referenced it earlier on, like, in the show, when he was describing, Michael, at one point, is describing that particular Earth 119, you know, Good Place number 119, and he said, yeah, I did a bunch of things. I gave you a pet lizard, and I had it poop on you, and...
I don't even remember that.
And so actually, all those elements of Earth 119 were actually... referenced earlier in the show, and I think it was I think it was the one where they're gonna take the balloon, like when
because they mentioned the balloon again.
Yeah, that was that one. So it was just kind of like, and it was just some throwaway lines that they're like, "Oh, we can resurrect this. Let's do it." But I'm surprised they even went with it, but it worked so perfectly. And apparently, the lizard crawling on the head was just like a thing it was doing, and Bell was like, "Ah, just let it crawl on my head."
Right.
It's just going to do what it's going to do.
Also, I had a weird visual issue because of the whole completely surreal joke at the beginning.
Oh, my God. Like, the Bell, like, bald with, like...
Right.
And spitting out teeth. That was actually kind of disturbing.
Yes.
It was like, is this supposed to be funny? That's fucking horrific.
Right. But somehow, I spent the rest of the episode weirdly focused on her hair.
Just,
and I don't know why, but I kept being like, "Is her hair thinner?" Like, even the flashbacks, they're just like, I don't know why, but it just it's so hit.
Is it maybe a
that
wig?
I couldn't get it out of my head?
I know exactly what you meant. Actually, the first scene where they go back and her hair, like, she's back to herself, I was like,
right.
I found myself sort of staring at the hair, wondering if it was real or not. Just
right,
just because there was something so kind of, I mean it. It didn't look like a funny sight gag. It looked like Kristen Bell suffering from, like, horribly invasive cancer, and this was the result of, like, terrible chemo. Like that's kind of how it landed in my gut.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like they've done, like, weird, you know, like, physical humor that should be kind of gross type things, but they've never gone this far into disturbing.
Yeah.
And so it felt completely out of place with the show.
Yeah, it really did. It seemed like sort of, it was uncharacteristic. I think the spitting out of teeth was the really fucked up thing.
And then just the, oh, you'll be fine in a minute, was just like, but we're on Earth. Like, that's, I don't know how, if I really like where that went.
That's right. And note that they, They did a little bit of a drop. I think they were basically trolling obsessive theorizers when Bell starts going on. Maybe,
oh God,
maybe this
yes.
is your bad place and some mega demon is torturing you. I'm like, you know what you're saying at this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, well, maybe that's going to be the case, but probably not. Also something that occurred to me from episode 4, and I just thought Eleanor and friends are now they're now bodhisattvas.
Yes.
Beings who have reached enlightenment but have elected to remain on the wheel of karma in order to help others. I'm like, that's interesting. And it just occurs to me, because the timeline of the afterlife is, it's literally a loop, right? So things recur again and again. So they're sort of, it seems to me they're sort of on this ride they can't get off, and they kind of know it. And it's
right.
really, really horrific. There's something really horrific undergirding The Good Place, and which you kind of ignore because it's funny, but...
But they're always open about it in the show, right?
Yeah,
like, the entire
exactly.
premise of the show, in fact, is so... horrific and wrong. And that's what the show is about.
Yes. Exactly. And I like the fact that they still have different philosophical positions that they can...
Yes.
That they can, like, so this time it's determinism, and it seems... It's funny that Eleanor hasn't hit determinism before, because it seems so in line with...
That we've seen.
Yeah, in line with her viewpoint.
I also did like this is the best thing that I've done. you put Belle and Danson, like, just at a lunch counter together, and it doesn't matter if they're just arguing determinism on, like, your TV set, you're just... fucking enthralled.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it was funny. I often forget just how sort of like small the scope of a lot of the episodes are. Like often they're just a couple of people in a room just doing a back and forth with like a little bit of like funny set dressing to like make you forget that it's really just, they're just filming just some people in rooms half the time.
But when you have a cast that good, that's all you need. So.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anything else would get in their way.
I did enjoy Tahani's Mimir Centaur as being a creature even worse than Tahani, which I thought was great. But it's like they take the, one of the weird things you see now is that they take the jokes about how shitty The Good Place is to such an extent that you're wondering why they didn't figure it out even sooner. You know, because
sure.
it's so cosmic, like that little sort of snippet was so cosmically terrible with these, like,
but again,
you know, again, I know.
If you died and were told that this is like heaven, I was like, what, why would you ever doubt it?
Exactly.
And, you know, life on it prepares you for even, like, things that are supposed to be perfect are terrible.
Right.
So it feels like it's in line.
Yep.
Welcome.
Everything is okay.
Oh, God. Also, I do like that they were making an issue with the way they used to dress Danson.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they seem to enjoy taking shots at Danson's wardrobe from the first season.
Yeah, well, because I think that they weren't quite happy.
Yeah,
and that they could just take these own shots at themselves. Who cares? It's all in good fun, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, I thought at first they were doing something like with this episode, I thought at first, I felt like they were doing kind of a community style clip show, before they actually
right.
sort of like showed where they were going with it, which was to throw at least two sort of unexpected little sort of twists at the end, which of course is now no longer quite as exciting. It's more like, oh, this is what they do.
Yeah.
So, do you think they're going to go see Doug Forchette, the guy in the
That painting? Is the only place they could be going.
Yeah. So, somebody on IO9 in the comments section was like, "Rural Canada, Calgary is not rural Canada." Like, yeah, well, you know, maybe he's moved. Maybe he lives in Okotoks.
Right.
Now. Just stop complaining.
Just don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, or they're going to make a joke about Canada. I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, they've probably made all the jokes about Arizona that they can now.
Oh, I do not believe that. I believe in them.
You believe that they can pull out more jokes?
I do. I truly do.
Oh my god! Yeah, they do not pull any punches with their regional America jokes. My god.
But moving on some, just because we should.
Well, why not?
Let's see. I know you haven't seen Legends this week. I just want to tell you that it is delightfully Legends.
Okay, that's good.
And then at least one thing I'm actually trying to confirm, and I don't think I'll have a confirmation for next week either, but I'm trying to confirm that what I thought happened.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which will not twig your radar at all. Just remind me if we talk about this episode next week.
Okay, well, I'm going to be watching it very soon, so, yeah.
But,
we can talk about it at a later point.
We both did watch Riverdale.
Yeah. Did we ever?
I have such love and so many problems with this episode.
I just... Like, they say, here's a show set in the 90s, or here's an episode set in the 90s.
Oh, Jesus Christ,
they reference
yes.
Smells Like Teen Spirit, and then clearly they just wanted to make an 80s episode. So like, fuck it, we'll do an 80s
right,
episode.
And they couldn't because of the time, but they really wanted to do the 80s
so
because...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just because it would work better for them
they
for
just
referencing.
Didn't care. And I don't know the exact year of the 90s. I can... If you... Say set it around maybe 91 or something, or even 92, then maybe the 80s parts would kind of work. But by
yeah,
and large,
but no.
No. No.
No. They wanted to do an 80s episode. They couldn't get away with it, just given the age of the adult cast. And they just stopped caring.
They just decided to get away with it.
Again, I think it was really smart having the current, you know, supposed teen cast playing their own parents.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't have to find, like, you know, we didn't have to have, like, a whole new cast for an episode.
Yeah, exactly. That was actually probably the signature most brilliant move in the whole thing.
But I do think it was odd just because so many of the actors who are the adults, again, because of their ages, we saw them as teenagers.
Yes.
Acting.
I know.
Like,
that's,
so,
that's
it adds
true.
A degree of difficulty.
Yeah, and I have to say, Lily Reinhart really does look like a young Machen Amick. Like, close enough that it was perfect. It was fine.
Well, and she got mannerisms down, and that was the thing with what's-his-name, you know, Archie, who had to be, and I felt bad for him, because he had to be Luke Perry.
Right. And he was, and he did Luke Perry.
He well, occasionally.
Yeah,
he didn't do any of the vocal tics that we know Luke, but I mean, they just didn't write them in.
Yeah.
He would have the head tilt.
Yep.
But that was about all he was doing.
Yeah, it seems like they could have leaned harder into that particular thing, and they kind of were just like, nah, we'll manage.
I think it was actually a smart move because again, the closer you try to do it,
exactly.
The more that the failure shows up. Where
right.
If you're just like, just run with this, people will.
Yeah, I think, frankly, it's unwise to try and push KJ Apa's acting chops too far. I'll just put it that way.
You know, at this point.
Yeah.
But
there is some great... I thought that Cole Sprouse did a really good young sort of Skeet Ulrich. That
yes.
was, like, he was good. There, yeah. That was a joy.
And of course, you know, he of course was acting back when this would... So... He was just a little kid, but he was still acting then.
Still,
so it
yeah.
gets even weirder the closer you look. But what kills me is that, again, we have this whole weird chick track set up for a season, right?
Right.
And this is. There's no other way to describe the season, but the chick track season.
Yeah, yeah, that's it.
But the idea that, like, this game where they all got high one night and then someone died and it changed everything forever for all of them.
Exactly.
Makes no sense at all.
You know,
like
it.
Not even for Riverdale. This was just a, oh shit, we kind of oversold this. Let's just, oh damn it.
Well, I thought they would. It was really weird because I thought to myself, in order to like really scare, if you're going to take this seriously, if you're going to basically scare people into becoming different people, then you need to have, like, some sort of more crazy-ass confrontation with the Gargoyle King. I think what they were trying to do, essentially, it's metaphorically, the Gargoyle King is adulthood. That's what it is, right? They transgress, they go too far in like adolescent risky games, and then they come up against like a living objective correlative of danger, and that's the Gargoyle King, and then they become adults overnight. They suddenly become set on the path that will take them down the road to what we see.
Right.
But the thing that does it is the Jughead's dad's dad dying, I think, or is it, I don't know, Archie's dad's dying? That seemed the thing, like missing that death seemed to be the thing that brings them up short. And I understand what they were doing there, but I don't think it was, I don't think it worked. I just don't think it just didn't work the way they wanted it to. But respect for trying, I guess.
Sure, it feels like they're also kind of setting up, in a weird way, they're setting up next season. Because they're kind of announcing that dealing with this changes everyone from what we thought they were into a different thing.
Yes.
And, yeah, I'm just, as much as, again, I love the episode, from just watching the episode pure, in a placing it in the season, placing it for what it means for any of the characters on either direction, it was a goddamn mess.
And yet it is probably one of my favorite ever episodes of Riverdale. Try and puzzle that out.
Oh, no, yeah. I'm with you. That's the thing. Like, this is the inherent Riverdale-ness of it, right?
I know. Yeah. This is, yeah, it's it is the hottest and messiest of hot messes.
Yeah, and again, it's completely watchable. It just, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And having them do a cover of Dream Warriors was...
That was a choice.
That was a choice. I kind of loved it. If you may recall, we had Cecily Walker on to talk about Riverdale and Black Lightning. I feel like I terrorized her by sending her a link to the video for the extended Dream Warrior thing. I think she threatened to block me or report me. And she said, "Do you hate me? Is that it?" And I just kept on responding with, "We're the Dream Warriors."
was. I just, goddamn it.
I got a
fucking show, man.
I loved the way that was actually the extended cut of the Dream Warriors video that they have was particularly good because it's filmed like a terrible 80s video. Like,
right.
The camera,
again,
like, just
not a
90s
video.
Yep. Just shoved up in everybody's faces with this wide-angle lens and just all kinds of, like, lights coming in from windows and, like, splashes of color. It felt like they had basically watched Total Eclipse of the Heart and decided to, like, run with it.
If they had had the budget to do it kind of half-animated...
Oh, my God, yes.
They would have. That's all I can say. It'll happen before the end of the show. Like, they're just gonna do an aha video.
Oh my god, I really, really hope so. And it had so many problems, which we've been talking about, but I can't really fault it.
I mean, again, this is the show that where the cheerleaders have special funeral outfits. Like, you have to just accept Riverdale for Riverdale at a certain point if you're gonna watch it.
Yeah, and there's gonna be a really horrific musical number in every episode. Like, nothing is going to make... Like,
even when there isn't?
Yeah.
Somehow there still is?
Somehow there is.
Which I haven't figured out yet. Like, there are episodes where there's no musical number, and yet you still feel that one happened somewhere.
Exactly, yeah. And how does... any, like, there's a speakeasy, like a non-alcoholic speakeasy beneath, like
Pops? Yeah.
There's... What?
Although, can I say, one of my favorite weird... like, kind of in-joke things. Mm-hmm. You know, Archie doesn't have a band yet.
Right.
But we know, historically, the band is called the Archies.
Right.
And it's always been one of those, like, well, how big is his ego? And the idea that, like, his father had a band and they were called the Fredheads, I was like, it just runs in the family.
Exactly. I love the Fredheads. That was kind of delightful. And also,
yeah, you'd think that they would have been covering, like, Grateful Dead music.
Yeah. Exactly.
If they're called the Fredheads. And yet...
Exactly. Exactly. I know Cheryl Blossom could do like a Grateful Dead cover band called, like, you know, Cheryl Garcia's.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that should happen.
Dear Riverdale. Dear,
how are you?
How are you? I am fine. Please make this.
There was a new Doctor Who that I haven't seen yet, but you have. You, I know you wanted to tell me something.
Yes, I shall spoil nothing at all. It is it's kind of a Yaz focused episode.
Okay.
Because every review I read, every single week, somebody, the reviewers say, Yaz remains undeveloped as a character. I don't know why they say this repeatedly. It's like, just be patient. Just shut up.
Right. There's a lot to do. There are a lot of characters.
There's
like,
a lot of characters.
They'll get there.
Exactly. So this one sort of goes, they go back to the partition of India, into India and Pakistan. And, you know, there's things afoot and Yaz's family history and so on. This was actually written by the writer of the show was actually Indian, which, I mean, perhaps I don't know. Vinay Patel is the writer's name. So the actual historical aspect of it feels a lot more legitimate in that way. And at the same time, of course, none of the historical actors really behave like historical figures. They all kind of behave like 21st century Brits.
It's Doctor Who.
Because it's Doctor Who, they all, you know, people essentially behave like contemporary fashion. Here's the thing. It ends up being in some ways like the last historical episode, like Rosa. It seems it comes down to a very similar sort of choices. Do we alter history, or do we have to let it happen even if bad things happen? But this time there's actual stakes based on the characters, and it was like, holy shit, that's all you have to do to make this stuff emotionally connect. And one of the things that Stephen Moffat just completely fucking forgot somewhere along the way was to actually have it matter to one
now,
of the
again,
characters.
I haven't seen the episode.
No.
I have not seen anything about the episode. I didn't even know where it was set.
No.
But what you're describing puts it in that league of Father's Day.
Yes. In fact, yeah, if there's anything you can reference for it, it is Father's Day. But it's funny because it does a very different way of dealing with a character.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm not saying that they're just like, oh, we'll just do this again.
But yeah, no, you're not wrong in noting this.
Yeah, I just that interests me because Father's Day was such a great episode. So hey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's that was.
And again, it comes down to those personal stakes, right?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I was thinking of Father's Day several times throughout this piece. And the funny thing is, this version of the Doctor is a lot more lackadaisical about these horrific problems that earlier doctors went to great pains to avoid. She would just say, okay, be careful. Just
right.
Don't go on, but just don't do anything dumb. Just, I've got other things to do. But it is very much, it also seems, it's one of the most Chibnall-y episodes. It's funny because he's not even the credited writer, but it still feels very much like a Chibnall script with a heavy emphasis on kind of sort of bearing witness to like tragedy and sort of mourning and commemorating losses and achievements, which is, they did it in Broadchurch. They've done another, like the last episode of Who, the Saranga Conundrum, when they have that sort of funeral sort of slash like celebration of birth at the end. So it's a similar thing. So I think we've very much, at this point, I can pretty much say that we've nailed down a Chibnall version of the Doctor and a Chibnall version of the show.
Nice.
Yeah.
I look forward to getting to watch it.
Yeah. So, a question. What was your feelings on last week's Who with the patina?
It reminded me, and maybe you, and probably no one else on Earth, of that Farscape episode.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Which was weird for me.
Yeah.
But it was a really weird episode.
It was.
And it wasn't that I didn't like it. It felt like they were trying to do a whole lot, but didn't know what they were doing until about halfway through the episode.
Yeah, they sort of...
When they buckled down and got out of their way and actually were like, oh, yeah, we have a story. Let's do that.
Yeah, it seemed like it was going in one direction, and then I think it turns probably around the time that the chief medical examiner, who seems to be set up to be like the main person in, you know, the main sort of like guest character, gets killed, and then they have to like, and then the Pating shows up, and then everything sort of like lurches into a different direction.
Right.
I still quite enjoyed the episode though.
But it was
uneven. But I mean, Christ! I mean, so many Who episodes are.
Yeah, I mean that's fine. I mean, I don't expect I expect Doctor Who. I don't expect something else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a slam on it. It's just, you know, that's what we get.
Yeah.
And it's what we enjoy. But yeah, just there are certain things this season so far that have felt less like we're figuring out who this Doctor is, and more like let's do a greatest hits of types of Doctor Who episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Not that like Davies and all didn't, but I think Davies did that in the first season when it was all very fresh to do, and then he kept doing the same episode, so it was less let's take the tour and more well, we're doing this now.
Right.
Which did eventually run him dry, I think. That's why people started, you know. And then Moffat didn't really do that at all, so returning to it feels weird and not a bad thing, just I'm not quite used to it.
Mm-hmm.
Anymore? I don't know. It does feel kind of greatest hitsy.
Yeah.
But I think, again, in the long run, next season, as weird as it is, but I mean, you know how you have to play that game with Doctor Who stuff, right? But I think next season it will let them do something new and not have to worry about, you know, it's like getting rid of all the old enemies so you don't have to do all those touchstones.
Right.
Instead, you can do the episode type touchstones, and now next season, we don't have to worry about, oh, have we done this episode? We know how that works.
Exactly.
So hopefully, again, like in the long run, it'll pay off in an interesting way.
I think it will. I'm sure that some people will. This most recent episode, I'm sure that some people will not like it at all. But I really enjoyed it. It had all the feels. And it had oddly enough kind of a stealth political stance about. It felt contemporary because, of course, you know, it doubles down on, like, you know, ideology and factionalism, tribalism, and Hindu nationalism a little bit too. So you get it feels contemporary, this one.
Yeah, I don't know. I am enjoying Doctor Who, damn it.
Me too.
I did like that somebody online was trashing Doctor Who because, you know, oh, you look at this, the ratings from the toilet. And it's like, really? Because they're actually higher than they've been since, like, 2010.
Yeah, people like to lie. They like to lie about these things.
But the important part of this is that the show's actually doing fantastic.
That is delightful. I didn't know what the ratings would be like, but I'm really glad to hear that they're good.
Well, I mean, again, we have a decent showrunner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who, I refuse to judge a showrunner on their first season.
Yeah. No, I agree. You gotta,
you know,
sort of
pass just like decent and oh god, like all the fine tuning of like oh he's great or meh, that comes like second, third season type of thing for you. You know.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think.
And I
think that I mean Chibnall is very. Like humanist, and is more interested in coaxing out like just stories about the people on the show, and I think that's a lot more. That's a lot more sort of fruitful than Moffat's, you know, bag of tricks approach.
Yeah,
in the long run. So I'm looking forward to more of this here Who stuff.
Yes. Although it's, how many episodes? 10 episodes? 13? Do we
know? I thought it was 13.
Okay.
I'd hope it's not just 10 because we're more than halfway through if that's the case, and I would be.
Right. Well, that's what I was wondering, just because of things like Good Place, where I'm like, oh god, we're hitting that turning point again.
Yeah. Holy moly, are we ever. Hey, we didn't even mention in Good Place that we're bringing in the demons back into the mix.
Oh, well. I mean, they had to eventually, right?
Yeah, exactly. But. I mean, actually, I'm just really glad they brought Taya Sirkar back.
Well, now that, you know, she's... Have you been watching Supergirl?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, because Supergirl did the weirdest thing this last episode.
The last episode I saw was the one about the origins of Agent.
Oh, okay. There's been one since.
Oh, there has. What?
Yes. Last week, that introduces a new character. Well, you know, not new from the comics, and seemingly very, very different than in the comics, but introduces a new character, Manchester Black. And I'm going to spoil this one bit for you.
Sure.
Because remember, Tia Sakaar's character, we saw her die.
Right.
And then this episode, she's not dead.
Oh,
and, like,
okay.
Still kidnapped by the aliens, by the humans. And I'm like, what? Can we? Although this episode did have one of the funniest conceits, which I decidedly loved it for all the stupidity involved in it.
Do you go on?
Which is, okay, so Melissa Benoist was doing a Broadway show for a little bit. Back when they were filming the season.
Right, so they had to sort of...
And she also had the crossover episode. So they're like, well, we'll put her in this suit.
Right.
And make sure the faceplate is opaque.
Right.
But just for, like, this episode, basically. So that we could just have her do some voice work over the phone. and very obviously have someone else in the suit, except for, like, two or three shots.
Fair enough.
And then, like,
okay.
A scene or two at the end, you know, type of thing. But it was just so weirdly transparent that it was just making me laugh.
That is really funny.
Because there was no reason to make that faceplate opaque. No reason on earth. In fact, there are reasons not to.
Right. Except but that's what they did.
Right, except this way they could use a stand-in.
Gotcha. I mean, if I were the showrunner, I would have insisted on googly eyes being stuck to the faceplate.
Right,
you know, that's just
something
me.
Fun.
Yeah,
but it just like I said, it literally makes less than no sense because again, the whole suit's supposed to help feed her with solar energy, but also be completely atmospherically contained so that the green kryptonite that's in the atmosphere can't hurt her.
So why make the faceplate opaque?
Right, because then she'd absorb even more sunlight, right? Like,
yeah,
wouldn't that be good?
That's what I would think.
But no, we don't get that, because...
Guess not.
It's being a Doctor Who fan, I think, made me laugh at that even more, just because there's always, back when there were the Christmas specials, which, again, we're not getting one this year, but back when there was that Christmas special, it was always the, we need a Doctor Light episode.
Mm-hmm.
And watching themselves contort story to come up with a good organic way to get rid of him.
Yeah, which I always really love the Dr. Light episodes. Well, I mean, maybe not Love and Monsters, but you know.
I like that episode, weirdly enough. It ends on a really terrible, creepy note.
But yeah, that's... But whatever.
Outside of the ending, I think it's a really good, strong episode.
Yes. And also, I thought it was a good comment, actually, on fandom. I mean, that's what I kind of thought was like the alien was basically like that asshole fan who ruins it for everybody else.
Right. But honestly, I love the bit with Jackie Tyler at the end.
Yep.
Like, that was one of the first times I truly liked Jackie. And I was just like, oh, she's going to fuck you up. And the fact that they had, like, the Scooby-Doo door chain, it was a fun episode.
Yeah.
And it used the ELO, so come on.
There we go. That is true. That is true.
So I have been watching something else. I had a friend with an account and I got to watch the first 5 episodes of Titans.
Ooh, okay. So I have watched the first 5 episodes of Titans as well. So we may discuss these Titans episodes.
Okay. So I'm going to say, oh God, that opening is terrible.
Okay.
I'm going to say 2 things very quickly off the bat.
Uh-huh.
That we don't even really need to discuss.
Okay.
We can discuss the show after that, but just I just need to get 2 things really quick. A, the show is terrible and wonderful at the same time.
Yep.
And it was a gigantic mistake. Gigantic. To do the backdoor pilot for the show that's not airing until next year that's also more watchable.
Yeah, I
don't
know.
Tease me with a show I'd rather watch. And
yeah,
then be like, yeah, wait till next year. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Not 4 episodes into your fucking show.
And I didn't realize that's what they were doing until the end of it. And I'm like, oh, okay, so we're probably never going to see them again. And I'm like, unless it's its own show. And then I went and
looked on the internet. No, it's its own show. But here's the other joke. the entire cast of that show outside of Elastigirl, Rita,
yeah,
are going to be different on the show.
Oh yeah, I knew that the Doctor was going to be played by somebody different, which I thought was
right.
Really,
the Chief
bizarre.
Is going to be Timothy Dalton.
What?
Yeah, Matthew Bormer will be Negative Man, okay. And I'm pretty sure that wasn't him in this.
Okay.
And Brendan Fraser will be Robot Man.
You're fucking kidding.
Voice wise,
that is really
no, and that was very much not Brendan Fraser.
No, I mean it was.
But they hadn't finished their casting when they filmed this.
Okay.
Except they did. You know, Rita, because she's the only one whose face you can see. Well, I guess Niles. But yeah, so it's a weird problem. But no, that episode was fantastic. So, okay, the show was terrible. Let's be honest.
Yep, pretty much.
The hyper-violence with the extra CGI blood spurts is laughably stupid.
Oh my god. It's like, hey, we've been all edgy for you, and let's have one F-bomb per episode. Yeah.
The great... We don't have the effects budget to actually do Beast Boy, so we're going to come up with a reason why he can only turn into a tiger, was brilliant and fucking terrible.
I love all the ways they basically get out of trying to, like, cut down on showing the transformation.
Right. They showed it once, and we're fine.
Yep. And then the other rest is like, yep, yeah, well, I'm behind some hay bales. Oh, I'm sort of off, out of focus in the
right.
background. Look, sure, that's cool. I don't mind. Mm. You got to do what you got to do.
But
although he always has his clothes with him, that's the funniest thing.
Well, no,
it.
He always leaves his clothes when he goes back to them.
I know, but I just love that they kind of thought of this. I don't know, whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
But and this is where the show becomes fabulous for me, and I'm already seeing it happen across 5 episodes, and we're not going to discuss Hawk and Dove because I actually like the comic version of Hawk and Dove, and this was so not them that it hurts my very soul.
That was there are some things in that reminded me of the worst things
like
from
the,
like
the fucking Steel movie with Shaq.
Oh my god! Like the costumes were terrible. Anyway, that's
well, the costumes actually look great.
Yeah. Oh man, I did not enjoy those costumes.
I actually like the costumes. They look very, you know, comic specific. Like they were. I mean, they were good. Like if you were doing a Hawk and Dove, there's Hawk and Dove. Okay. But it's, you know, in the comics, like they're these magical, like one is. Basically works for the Lord of Chaos, the other works for the Lord of Order, and the whole thing is can Order and Chaos work together?
Right.
And they only have powers like when danger threatens and they say their name, which I know is comic stupid, but fine.
Yeah.
And then they transform into their costume and they have their abilities, otherwise they don't. This is just two people who put on some fucking suits.
Yeah, I know. I knew that Hawk and Dove in the comics were a lot more sort of...
Well, and the entire concept of like Dove being a pacifist. You know, fights with things like Aikido and Judo and all, like, out the window.
Yeah.
But, and here's where the show becomes fantastic to me. They are exploring in depth, in a different way, a very specific slice of Dick Grayson that has never been dug into this way before. And it's probably the second most important point in Dick Grayson's life. And that is fascinating to me.
Interesting.
Because in the comics, when he quits working with Batman, he already has a team of Titans.
Okay, yeah.
He already has another surrogate family to walk into.
Right.
And there's some self-doubt and all that and so on. But this is when you take this kid who lost his family, ended up with this other family, decides that it's toxic for him.
Mm-hmm.
And leaves. It, you know, because we all, or at least, you know, comic fans in general, tend to see Dick Grayson as Nightwing, as that grown-up kind of... He's mentally put together, if that makes sense. Like, he's, you know, he'll laugh at danger type of thing. He's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
He's very competent. He will treat his team members like family. You know, Dick Grayson is kind of like, he's the guy, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's who you want on your side. You want him. And this is showing you that struggle to get there that I've never seen delved into like that.
I agree. This is where I thought you were going with this, and it does make it interesting to watch him try to like get a new family, one that, you know, knowing that like, you know, he's basically been living in this weird dysfunctional sort of family, you know, of him and dyad of him and Batman for so long. That quite enjoy.
Right, and just the recognition even in himself that he's been going too far.
Yeah, exactly.
And like you see it with, and that is the one I think the Hawk and Dove thing lets you do is it's like, oh, they've known him for a while, and they're like, no, dude, this is weird.
Yeah, no, you're
like you're getting scary.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you're doing what you said you left Batman because he was doing, and that's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. There are still some sort of like annoyingly edgy bits. Like when I was watching episode 5, I'm like, this is gonna be the one where they go, let's watch, you know, Robin and Starfire get it on. And it's like,
sure,
oh, yeah,
but I mean, in the comics, they pushed that as far as they could anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, okay, sure, why not? And I have to say, I love the. I'm a little sad the homicidal family is already gone.
The Atomic Family, which actually is in the comics.
Oh, the Atomic Family. Thank you. That's what they are.
It's such a great name.
Yeah.
But it opens the door for, you know, other weirdness and other Titan stuff as they go up toward, you know, Raven's demon father.
Right.
And the whole, whatchamacallit, I can't even remember the name of the cult, but, blood is in there somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, because again, like in the comics, like that's why Raven gathered the team, so they're kind of playing that out.
Yeah.
But no, watching, you know, Dick Grayson become Dick Grayson is just, that will keep me watching for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few, like, little petty fan things that I'm like, man, why can't we do this? You know, watching Raven kind of, like, do the whole, what in the comics is known as her soul self type of thing.
Right.
It's just, like, this CGI mass of darkness instead of this kind of weird, cool, silhouette-y thing. I'm like, maybe we'll get there, you know?
Yeah.
I do like how they lampshade, though, that somewhere in the finale is my guess. When everything seems lost, Beast Boy will turn into something else. My guess is a gorilla.
Oh, that'd be good.
You know, we have to pull that trigger, you know.
Yeah, there's...
We're eventually going to have to pull the Corey as an alien.
Yep.
Unless they're changing that, because they could change it.
Yeah,
they're allowed.
They are allowed. Although it seems like they're probably that's where they're going to go, because, you know, there's the, you know, they find her sort of, you know, her little, like, storage area with, like, weird, you know, script and everything. So I'm betting they're going to stick with Starfire as an alien.
Right, well, I mean, they can also this way bring in the next season if they want, is her sister.
Oh, okay. I don't know anything about this.
Yes, the unfortunately named Blackfire.
Okie dokie. Comics. Fucking comics.
Actually, I think they might have already cast her.
Oh.
No.
And it took me. It's funny. It took me a little bit to get used to. I can't remember who the actress is, but the way they did her hair and everything. The first episode, I was like, "This looks janky and cheap and stupid." But now it looks fine to me now. Like I kind of adjusted to the magenta hair. I'm like, okay, sure.
You know, I'm pretty sure they're gonna bring in. A version of Wonder Girl. I mean, we've seen Donna Troy is in there.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they're going to do that version of her as Wonder Girl, or if they're going to do a different version. You know what I mean? Like.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that she's going to eventually show up in the show, just because you don't name drop her if you're not going to.
I also have to say I feel bad for the actors, because I know this is being filmed like around like Southern Ontario and like in winter, and that is such a shitty time to be outside. It is so damp and gross and cold, and I'm just like, oh, you poor sots.
Yeah. Oh, one little petty type of thing that I actually really like.
Mm-hmm.
Any adaptation of the Robins these days merges Robins, even if they use separate ones. They tend to give a lot of the Tim Drake Robin stuff to Dick Grayson.
Hmm.
You know, the staff, like the telescoping staff, is very much a Tim Drake thing.
Oh, okay.
All the hacking stuff was always Tim Drake. which, like, Young Justice kind of screws up, and then they bring in Tim Drake, and they do something slightly different with him, which is fine. I get it.
Sure.
But one of the things, this is very much like a Tim Drake costume, and the thing that got me about that was that early on when he got his own costume, at one point it's this big kind of, not startling moment, but, you know, where he takes his little R symbol and throws it, because he just takes it off the outfit.
Right.
Because traditionally it was always just, like, you know, cloth. And then suddenly you see, like, in Tim Drake's, like, no, that's actually, like, a throwing thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he just kind of seems to have the one, because it comes off the costume.
Yeah.
And I like how they solved that with this. Like, no, it's bulked out, like, it's armor. So it's just, like, there's a fast loader in there. And, like, that made me laugh. Also, he just, like, he doesn't have the access to the Batcave full of this shit. So he has to go around picking them up and cleaning them.
I love that, too. Actually, I really did like that. I thought that was...
So yeah, I mean, the show is having fun. It shouldn't be, because it's terrible. But it is also... Yeah, I think it will get less dark and grim as it goes, because it's all going to ride on Dick Grayson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think we're going to end up in a much healthier place for the show for season two.
I really hope so, because, I mean, it's... It's... If I thought it was really all as bad as I like to say, I probably wouldn't be still watching it. I'll put it that
way. I mean, here's the thing. They already have a second season, right? I mean, they've already been confirmed for a second season.
Yeah.
They have 12 episodes. This season will end with... I do like the fact that they're already like, okay, we're kind of like a team. We're going to start training. Because it's Dick Grayson. He's not going to slack.
Right.
But you get the sense that, like, by the end of the first season, they will be the Titans.
Yes.
The name will come out. They'll have a big battle with any number of big Titan villains that are all lurking.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is the end of season two, we get Nightwing.
Oh, okay. I was thinking we'd get Nightwing earlier than that, but sure.
We could, but I feel like if you want to make the show... I mean, we could. We could have by the end of season one.
Yeah.
But, I mean, my gut says, like, if we already have a season two, and we want to build out the cast and keep introducing new characters and build out the world, you don't want to change your central characters too much.
Mm-hmm.
And they're already doing so much change with Robin now. Mm-hmm. That's something going, and now he's Nightwing, is weird. Although the push for it in this last episode of I'm the new Robin, having Jason Todd show up, could push that way faster than I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking we might get Nightwing a little sooner, because, I mean, he's already been replaced, which is going to be, it's going to feel a little weird.
I am a little concerned about that, though, because I've like, given how they armor the costumes,
mm-hmm.
I have never seen a Nightwing costume that was, like, that heavily armored that looked right.
Hmm.
That didn't look weird. It's the push and pull of a Dick Grayson outfit in specific, because he is an acrobat.
Right.
Is that push and pull of, like, if you armor him too much, you can't ever make him an acrobat?
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't do it enough, then you're like, well, he's just stupid. So, it's a weird push and pull.
Yeah. We shall see.
It brings to mind, back in the days of the animated series, they had that season where they suddenly everyone's redesigned.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And they did an episode where, like, you know, Tim just leaves. And he's like, the hell with this. And Dick leaves, and you get Tim, and that's all good. And then Dick comes back, and he's Nightwing, and there's no real explanation for what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did, like, a mini-series in comics that were, like, in the animated universe to show how he got there, which was very different than anything had ever been in the comics.
Right.
But I just like that they were just like, also, if you care, here, you don't need to know. It's just, if you want to know, here you go. I like that sort of, like, you don't need the deep dive bullshit,
mm-hmm.
but we also understand that sometimes you want it.
Yeah, exactly.
And if that is a thing you are into.
As some of us are.
Anyway, we are hitting the hour mark.
We are. I'm so glad that you watched a bit of Titans so we could have a little talk about that, because I've been kind of dying to talk about it, so there we go.
Yeah, and I had the opportunity to watch them, so I did, and I'll hopefully keep watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I am on the fence about getting my own subscription, frankly.
Yeah, I, you know, it has to be something more than just one or two shows, obviously, right?
Right, and I mean, they have a bunch of the animated movie stuff, but, like, mm-hmm. only one or two new ones, and I don't tend to like them much anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, they have, like, all the cartoons, but I have those on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it will take to tip it in that favor, but mm-hmm. I don't think it's quite there yet. I mean, it might just be Young Justice, frankly, and I'll just be like, well, I like Titans, even though it's not going to be running at that point. But it is one of those things of, like, by the time Young Justice comes on, like, right as Young Justice finishes, they start Doom Patrol. Right as that finishes, they finish up Young Justice. Then there's more Titans. Like,
yeah,
it might just be enough to make me go, oh, all right.
We shall see.
We shall see. But for now, we should cue up some music.
Yeah, let's cue that music.
Woo!